this is Jeff Cobra, and we welcome you to this Disney Insights. Well, this May and June, Disney's Hollywood Studios, Disney's Typhoon Lagoon Water Park, and Disney's Pleasure Island will be 35 years old. The only way this would have occurred is if there were employees to make that happen. By this time, the market for available frontline employees was tight, as Universal was preparing to open its first theme park, and other competitors and hoteliers in the area were needing people as well. The answer was to intentionally create a place for people to go to get a job as a Walt Disney World cast member. The design of this unique facility offers many insights as to how to attract potential hires. This work may be more virtual these days with a wide range of online tools, social media, but the messages from this facility and its unique hiring processes still stick. Join us for hiring lessons from 35 years of the Disney Casting Center. And make sure you are subscribed to our Disney Insights blog, because there's going to be some of the key points are going to be outlined there today. Also, we'll have links to some very important things we're going to be addressing, including our Wayfinder Society, which is our Patreon group, which is going to allow you to have opportunities to even gain more insights to how to create a great employee experience. So make sure you check out and subscribe to DisneyInsights.com. Make sure you also check out Disney Insights on our YouTube page and also our Facebook page. Join us wherever possible. Also check out Jeff Cobra on LinkedIn. That's a great place for meeting me with issues around business, because we talk about these things as well there. So be sure to join us and check us out if you can. Now, I want to just, before we get going, because this is a great topic and it's a timely one, I want to talk about a couple of things. Lots of things are happening since the shareholder meeting and the podcast that I did right after that. It's still worth checking out. In fact, that podcast had me talking about where this Pandora Land was going to end up at Disneyland. And I conjectured the issues, the juxtaposition of the idea of taking out the submarines when at the same time you're making an announcement that you're going to make the Autopia electric. So obviously some people have conjectured that this is going into the property that would be near the parking structures near the Disneyland Hotel that could reside in that area if the Disneyland Ford goes forward. But there is one or two individuals who have suggested and kind of conjectured back and forth, could it go into this area? So more on that as the days and months occur. Also, two podcasts ago, we went through Disney Animal Kingdom. We ended up talking at length because permits had been filed for construction trailers to what appeared to be the work going on in Dinoland at Disney's Animal Kingdom. Well, since then, there were a number of social media influencers who had an opportunity to go and visit Disney Imagineering and hear from Josh Giamaro and some of the major Imagineers. And I got to tell you, there are a couple of things that are very interesting. One of which is for the first time in forever, because when that first diagram came out last November, the new diagram that would show Indiana Jones and Encanto coming to the Dinoland, I was the lone voice in the wilderness that said, wait a minute, there's a third possible thing going on here, and it looks like it could be related to Coco. In fact, there looks to be, where the Dino Dig is, a carousel. I talked about this two podcasts ago, and I talked about it back in last fall. And I said, I could see that this could be something of a Coco carousel. Well, today I was listening to a major podcaster, and they were noting the Coco carousel, which also ties into the Restaurantosaurus next door. I knew that that would not be for a venue that size. It would be uniquely Colombian cuisine, typical of Encanto. Instead, I see it much more being Mexican cuisine tied to cocoa. And I think that is very much the case. By the way, another aspect of this is that a former Imagineer took a look at the model, which was presented last week, and said, well, wait a minute here. It looks like this Casa Madrigal, the house in Encanto, is elevated. Could this have a sense of possibly being similar to Mystic Manor? Well, let me just say, from day one, I think even before anybody has suggested that Encanto take over Dinoland, I've been saying you need an Encanto Casa Madrigal experience where you enter like you enter into Mystic Manor and you go through a Mystic Manor type experience. Even the queue on the side in that model. I mean, if you go to Encanto, the film, the house is not elevated. But in the model of the Imagineers, it is elevated, similar to how Mystic Manor is elevated to kind of hide the show building behind it. I'm telling you, this is the same thing, same stuff going on here. And I think it's very interesting that that there's some ties. Well, anyway, that's neither here nor there. We're just going to be looking at all this. Also, a whole lot of talk about the Das Pass being redone, or the process being redone. And I got to tell you, there's more rumors than truth. I've heard numbers. One social media influencer said like 60-80% of the people in a Genie Lightning Lane are Das users. I can tell you that is not the case. It is interesting that the numbers of Das users has gone up, particularly when Genie Plus was brought in, but that's neither here nor there. I promise you, when I get a better sense, a better pulse on this, and probably even when I have a chance to take my own child through it, we have a Das Pass. I have two autistic children. One is high functioning, one is low functioning. I don't do a Das Pass for my high functioning one. I do a Das Pass for my lower functioning one. If that individual, if my son wants to go on that attraction, otherwise we don't go. It doesn't happen. So at any rate, more on that. We're going to see where that is all going to ultimately go. What we're going to talk about here is this thing called the Disney Casting Center. And you may have seen it along I-4 as you've driven by it. It kind of has this Argyle socks kind of look to it. There's a whole story behind it, and it goes back to 1971 when you were trying to get a job at Walt Disney World. You had to exit. What I do know is you had to exit at the Lake Buena Vista exit at 535. It was next to the Shoney's. I think this is where the Centricare building is now. I've been trying to go to a couple older Pioneers to say, where were these trailers? And were there two? Now, two very dependable sources said they only remember one trailer. Others remember two trailers. And the two trailer experience goes back to George Caligridis, who eventually took over all of Walt Disney World and managed that. He talked about how you'd approach this, and there'd be two lines going to these two nondescript buildings. And in truth, if you got in one line, you ended up interviewing for the Magic Kingdom. If you got in the other line, you ended up interviewing for the resorts and the other parts of the hotels and so forth. And he ended up in the line that ended up giving him a job getting as a working busing tables. That's how he started, ultimately becoming head of all of Walt Disney World, but started with busing tables at Disney's Contemporary Resort. So over the years, and then after that, what I do know is that the building was moved to the North Service Center. Now, the North Service Center is kind of north of the Magic Kingdom, and it was kind of a nondescript building there. I don't know how people found it, but the humorous thing, my colleague, a former colleague and close friend, Judy, she remarked, I recall casting moving to the building, to a building, the North Service area across the parking lot from what is now DU. Another individual, a close friend of hers, said, you're right, I only recall one trailer and casting was moved to that one-story building at the North Service Area Gate. That's where casting went after that. I don't know how, and I said, fascinating that casting was moved to the North Service Gate, considering that was an area that was really difficult to access back then. And she said, yep, the joke was that if applicants could find the new location down the narrow winding road, they were guaranteed to be hired. Or she went on to say, it honestly did cut way down the no-shows on the first day of work because they actually knew where they were supposed to go after they were hired. So, any rate, it was a mess for many years, but Disney was the only, game in town, and that didn't really matter so much. But they did face challenges because there was growth. At first Epcot, then some additional hotels, and then we came into what became known as the Disney Decade. And this came, the beginning of this came particularly in 1989, when the Disney MGM Studios, Disney's Typhoon Lagoon, and Disney's Pleasure Island all opened up within weeks of each other. Moreover, competition for employees became even greater as Universal prepared to open its doors a number of months later. Remember, there was a big competition between Disney MGM and Universal who could open first, and because of the Reedy Creek District, Disney managed to get it out the gate first, but any rate, it was all what it was. Any rate, so the competition for employees was huge. And to make it possible for Disney to hire the number of employees it needed, some kind of facility had to be built to provide what then became about 100,000 employee interviews every year. Remember, not everybody gets it hired. But you still got to go through all those interviews. So an earlier plan was to simply build a clone of the nondescript Sunbank buildings, which became SunTrust Building, which is just a building that is across from Disney Springs, Disney Village Marketplace. It's actually quite nice on the inside. It's got a beautiful atrium, but it's just a four or five story building that's really nondescript. And so the thought was, let's just go and do a clone of that building. But Disney CEO Michael Eisner saw a new opportunity in which he saw the possibility of employing an architect to really build out something impressive. And so he enlisted the architect of Robert A.M. Stern. I think he had done work on his parents' house some years earlier. And they really didn't give him a lot of requirements. It was kind of the office portion was kind of built on the cheap. It looks very cubicle-like when you get to the office portion. But the portion that new employees or potential employees would see, they just said, don't make it look too serious looking. The idea was that Stern took out of that was to express the idea of Disney without being overly literal, and that it needed to do so for people traveling at speeds of about 55 or much higher, or now actually about 5 miles an hour given all the traffic on a busy freeway. As Disney leader Peter Rummel noted, quote, we needed to define Disney through a rear view mirror. And so to provide the personnel support for such an expansion that was going on, a distinctive casting employment center was built, a sort of castle-like structure that could be seen from the freeway. Most of the resort for Walt Disney World had been placed at Walt's urging furthest away. This is one of the things he made Roy promise before he passed away, that would be on the north end by that North Service Center that we just talked about, because he wanted that to be kind of the carrot or the weenie at the end of the stick that would draw guests all the way to the back, and then anything they put in between, they would, like Epcot, the community of tomorrow, Epcot, they would have to go through in order to get to the Magic Kingdom. So he wanted the Magic Kingdom to attract people all the way to the end of what was World Drive. But attracting potential employees required a very different approach in the 1980s. That necessitated putting it as close to the road as possible, like you were having to place a McDonald's. Make it as easy to see, make it as clear as to what the building was all about and so forth. Frank Wells, who was president of the company, loved the way the building explained the company to prospective employees as, quote, a place to show off your wares, end of quote. Stern explained that even for those who got hired by Disney, the 61,000 feet of the casting center may be the only time you experience the total identity of the corporation. It's very important symbolically, end of quote. And yet from the exterior, it really actually says very little specifically about Disney. So let me talk through the casting facility, and let's start with the exterior. As I mentioned, the casting center can be seen from I-4, and just so you know that it's the casting center, big words, casting, are put on pillars to completely draw attention to those driving who might be interested in working for Disney. They wanted you to get off the freeway. They wanted you to drive to the facility, walk in, and make an application to work there. That's what they wanted to do at that time. Now, I have to say, and we'll talk about this a little later. Nowadays, you see one of those highway mobile signs, and the sign says go online to apply for the casting center. So things have evolved greatly in 35 years. It's still used as an office. But initially in those days, long before the internet, they wanted it to be a place that was interesting enough that people would get out there. And there are untold stories of people who literally, they might have been on vacation, they may have been passing through, they did see the sign, they got off, they went in and applied, and many, if not most, got a job. They're working. There is a sort of Argyle design which uses diamonds, which to me could suggest a number of things, but to me could suggestively give the hint at the idea that we're all linked together like diamonds in a sort of seamless design of collaboration. That's how I put it together. There are castle motifs. The whole thing looks Venetian with the Argyle look, but there are castle motifs out of glass and other structures at the top of the building, kind of giving a little sense of the castle. And then there is a glass at the bottom that arches, that actually with some keystones at the top of it. And it's actually something similar. Stern talked about it being similar to something seen in Venice, which was known as the Bridge of Sighs. S-I-G-H-S. I think here it kind of symbolizes that crossing over from one employment to another, or from one life experience to working with Disney. And then there are also, I should just mention, very small, I think they're called scuppers, and they're shaped in the silhouette of Mickey Mouse. So if nothing else, you kind of see those little Mickey Mouse shapes, and that kind of tells you that it is a Disney building. Now, if you get off the highway and you come around, which is across from what is now Disney Springs, at that time it was Disney Village Marketplace, ready to introduce Pleasure Island shortly. And by the way, if I forget to mention it, we are going to be talking about Disney MGM's 35th anniversary, Disney Hollywood Studios. Now we're going to be talking about Disney Typhoon Lagoon. We're going to be talking about Pleasure Island all through May, at some point in May and June, as they celebrate their 35th anniversary. So know that those things are out there as well. When you get to the front door, a very interesting thing occurs is that you get to a pair of doorknobs. And these doorknobs actually look like the doorknobs from Alice in Wonderland. They're less than about a foot in height, although the nose of the doorknob is the knob itself, and it's very big, just like in Alice in Wonderland. It is a kind of subliminal message. If you remember, at one point, Alice is totally small and this doorknob dwarfs her. And she's trying to get through the doorknob. At another point, she's very tall and big, and the doorknob is very small, and she can't get through the door. So it the subliminal message here that was always mentioned is the idea that you're in control. You're taking hold of your future. You're opening the door to your future, but you're in control, and you're larger than the doorknob, so to speak. By the way, it's also a character that is uniquely Disney. It's actually not found in the Lewis Carroll book, if I recall. I think Jim Corcus is the one who told me that. Then when you enter, this is a really interesting thing. You come into an oval-shaped area where there are pillars all around, and on top of the pillar are gold statues. Now, many corporate offices, when you enter, have pictures of the CEO and the president and the chairman of the board and all those kinds of things. Here, what you actually get are Disney's top brass on display. Actually, it looks more like gold, but it's top brass on display. And these 14 top brass include Dumbo, Timothy, Pinocchio, Jiminy Cricket, Goofy, Roger Rabbit, Mickey, Minnie, Chip, Dale, Tinkerbell, Donald Duck, Daisy Duck, and Thumper. So the idea here is, obviously, organizations don't have Roger Rabbit and Goofy in their organization, but the idea here is providing a sense of creating a friendlier hierarchy that is more approachable and relatable, creating a place where that seems friendly. By the way, one of the interesting things, because this is the first space you walk into after going through the doors, is that there's actually no welcome desk in this area. What happens is you turn and you go up a ramp to the second floor, and there's a welcome desk there. Stern felt it was important that those entering actually made the ascent first and became familiar with Disney and the images that they passed by before speaking with someone at the desk. I don't know that anybody at casting ever really liked that idea, and I think they've ended up having to do things. But that was the original design intent of this space area, was let's immerse them in the culture before we talk about getting a job. That's the philosophy here. Now, going up that ramp, what happens is it's like a corridor. It's not very wide. It's probably about 10 feet wide. But on each side are a set of murals. And the murals on the side of the building that actually leans or would face out to I-4, you don't see I-4. But what you do see is a mural of I-4 in cartoon mode. And it's I-4 traffic at its busiest. I mean, right there you see Mickey pulling a trailer and he's getting a ticket while going down the highway, and everybody's upset and frustrated. So that's one side of the wall. Now on the other side of the wall, we get a very different picture. Here, what we get is this fantastic world of Disney. It's a pleasant world. Other than that which exists on I-4 and outside of Disney, as all the subliminal messaging of where potential candidates will find the best place to work. It even has a picture of Walt sketching Spaceship Earth while leaning on a rail. It's kind of a Trump-Loy kind of sense of artwork, again, going with that Venetian look and feel. In fact, the Venetian Palace, or Doge's Palace from Epcot, is actually seen in the background behind Spaceship Earth, and so is the Eiffel Tower, which, again, was just opening up weeks after this building opened up. But all of this is inspiration for those seeking employment, that this is the idyllic place to work and to actually be. And then On top, you actually have above both sets of murals and between skylights is actually a mural from Peter Pan, where Peter is seen flying towards Neverland and seen up in the air. And then there's kind of another quote-unquote bridge of size, which is partly functional because actually this whole corridor is set apart from the rest of the office building. And so there's still a need for employees to kind of get from one section of the building to another. But it also suggests kind of a crossing over from one place in life to another. Any rate, it's just all part of this, and the Argyle diamonds continues on the wallpaper where there isn't mural images, and it's all part of the imagery. And then when you get to the top, you finally get to the employment desk, and in the early days when you just stopped and came into the building, prospective cast members would be offered some snacks or drinks. And then they'd actually be invited to go into a theater. And I remember the theater actually had red curtains. I mean, it was like a mini little movie theater. And there, they're actually shown a brief video. I would say it was about 7 or 8 minutes in length. And in it, they presented 4 non-negotiable requirements. They set up the expectations for actually working at Walt Disney World before they even filled out an application. And the 4 criteria created an acronym supporting the term CAST or cast member. And it stood for C for compensation, A for appearance, S for schedule, T for transportation. So CAST. The compensation in that section, they talked about how the pay for frontline employees is set to a particular schedule. Disney, by the way, doesn't pay high wages. It usually pays a little bit above average for each job, above the 55th percentile, about the 55th percentile. But then they would actually talk about the benefits you would get as part of that compensation package. Then the next thing they would talk about is appearance. Well, you know, based on the customer experience Disney tries to produce, it demands a very specific appearance set of guidelines that require potential employees to look a certain way if for their role. In other words, you are part of the show. So they talk about appearance. Then third, they talk about the schedule. And Disney's own labor demands are reflected in its philosophy, quote, "We work while others play." Not only is its operation busiest during holidays and weekends, but any new hire will have at least seniority of more than, will have the least seniority. I'm sorry, let me say that again. But any new hire will have the least seniority of more than 70,000 cast members to get that perfect schedule. And so they set that expectation up. And then finally, the last T is transportation, because Walt Disney World is located outside most public transportation networks. Cast members have to have their own reliable transportation to satisfy the ever-changing scheduling requirements of the huge entertainment complex. For instance, and now Disney actually does, there are buses, county buses or city buses that take you into Walt Disney World, but they may not be there at 2 o'clock in the morning. And 2 o'clock in the morning may be when you're getting off your shift after a Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween party and that type of thing. So they set up in this film, it was professionally done, and they set up these expectations of compensation, appearance, schedule, and transportation. And then the doors would open and you could decide, is this right fit for me or not? And you could decide at that moment, hey, thanks, I'm gonna head out. In fact, 10 to 15% of those who watched the video actually self-selected out, which actually saved the company costs for processing labors and materials, leaving the rest, who are usually a better fit for the unique Disney culture. So that was kind of a world-class difference. Instead of hiding the potential deal-breaker issues, as some employers do, Disney would lead right up front with the requirements for being an employee. And so all of this fit. And if you were comfortable with that, they'd give you an opportunity to go fill out a form for application. And once it was on paper, then it became online. Now, of course, the whole thing is online. But the messages in all of this still have a great deal of application. Nobody's going to build a building. In fact, Disney never, in all their other places, really built buildings quite like this for employee hiring. But it did send out a couple of really good messages that even if your job is to hire employees, you know, via the internet or whatever it might be, you might want to consider what I often refer to as souvenirs for you and your organization. So consider the following. First, how are you intentional in your efforts to attract employees to your workplace? Are you making that intentional effort? Are you trying to do it? Or are you just whoever shows up? And I'm surprised by how many organizations really do not have a strategy for hiring employees. It's amazing. And they get what they get as a result of it. Second, how is your work culture symbolized in the hiring experience? What are the messages? Again, it could be an online platform, but there should be messages in the hiring experience. And let me give an example of that. Disney has and I'll put this into the show notes. There is a ad message that I post, and in it is in the center of this ad post is Cinderella Castle with the caption Walt Disney World Cinderella Castle. Adjacent to it is large text that says, "We create magic and memories." It's not, we are amusement park and resort destination. Rather, it focuses on the higher mission. We create magic and memories. And in fact, behind that, you could see a family flying on Dumbo, and you get that sense of that, the memories that are created from the magic that is drawn from the experience of being at Disney. Then throughout this picture, there are three individuals that are showcased. The first is Sonia, who is a project technical specialist. And she, it says, Sonia, project technical specialist, supports the technology behind the magic. So, and Sonia is an African-American. She's a woman, not typically what you identify as that STEM applicant, that individual who has an engineering degree and so forth. But they're trying to send a message of diversity, of inclusion, of belonging. And they're saying, hey, we are looking for people from all backgrounds. And we are not stereotyping certain jobs to certain people, which has been a problem. You know, for instance, many years, and I'll talk about this probably in another podcast shortly. Many years, if you were Haitian, if you were Haitian male, you ended up custodial. If you were Haitian female, you ended up in housekeeping. It was almost that segmented. Not intentional. It was just that those hidden biases that people have. This speaks a different message. The second one is Tico, lifeguard. Again, sense of Latino heritage. He encourages safe fun in the sun. That's what it says. Encourages safe fun in the sun. And he's got his lifeguard hat. And by the way, he's a more elderly individual. He's not your typical teenager being the lifeguard. We see a more senior individual in this role. Again, diverse background, that type of thing. All sorts of role. And then we've also played this message that, like the technical specialists, we need technical people as well as nice, smiley, friendly faces helping you, you know, go into the park. We also need people we also focus on safety. Safety matters. Safety is first. It's the first standard. And so there's a message in that. And then the third person is Yari. She's Attractions Guest Services Manager. Has a wonderful countenance, smile, and it says underneath her title, leads a team that delivers magic. So two messages is that leaders come from everywhere. You don't have to be old and white and male to be the leader. You could come from a variety of experiences. You also What is your job? You're to lead a team that does what? Provide resort and attractions? No, provides magic. So these kinds of messages, again, these are messages you can find online or in a billboard or whatever it might be. But the idea to this is that these kinds of messages can be found, and you need to think, how is your work culture symbolized in the hiring experience? Third, what facets of your hiring experience allows potential employees to have control of their experience moving forward? Give people choices. Give employees choices as candidates for employee and hiring. Give them choices. Choices in the kind of positions they want to apply for. Choices in the kind of hours or schedule they're looking for. The more choices, the better you're going to be able to attract a wider net, be able to cast a wider net in getting the right fit employee for you. Fourth, how do you symbolically flatten the look of your organization so as to suggest that everyone's critical to the organization's success? Again, the diamonds in the Argyle design, the Disney characters in gold, you know, you have this sense that everybody is a part of the magic in making it happen. How do you do that? Next, how do you facilitate opportunities for future employees to opt out if they see that the employment opportunity is not a right fit for them? Better to have it now than 60 days after hiring. So how do you create those opportunities for them to thoughtfully look at the issue and see if it's right fit for them? And then finally, how does the employment process contrast with competitors or with others? Do you stand out in the crowd? In the same way the silly building stands out in the crowd for 35 years, how do you make it stand out? Now, that's the Disney Casting Center has been not only playing a critical role for 35 years, the concepts and ideas behind it have been playing a significant role over many decades in trying to bring the best employees and provide the best employment experience possible at Disney. So, congratulations, happy anniversary, Disney Casting Center. We'll be talking about how you set up for Disney MGM Studios and Typhoon and Pleasure Island. We'll be talking about those in the weeks to come as we celebrate those anniversaries. I also want to celebrate the fact that Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is almost 5 years old. Can you believe it's been 5 years since Disneyland premiered? I think at the end of May, June, I got to check my calendar. At the end of the summer for Disney's Hollywood Studios, we got to talk a lot about that. So we got a lot. And then, of course, all this other crazy stuff that keeps coming. And, of course, Tiana's Bayou Adventure. There's so much to cover. So make sure you subscribe to this podcast and to our accompanying blog so you are notified of podcasts as they come out. Now, would you want more of this? Because this is one of the things that we offer in Disney Insights, not just a couple of things about fun rides and attractions to go on and what's the best time of day to get in line for this or that, or what's your favorite Disney snack. Those are things we love to cover. But we cover so much more, and we go into insights around Disney. That distinguishes this podcast, the insights we bring. We don't bring this totally positive, everything's wonderful about Disney, everything's perfect about Disney, and we don't bring this negative attitude that some podcasters, social media influencers bring that make you kind of think, why do they even come to Disney? They don't even sense they love that. We are in that space that says, let's celebrate what really works about Disney. And when things don't work, let's understand the why. And let's use that as the basis for being a great fan of Disney, or for many, to better understand how I could improve my own life or the life of my organization, the business I work for. If you want more to this podcast, besides the weekly podcast we do, you need to join the Wayfinder group. This is our Patreon group. It's how we bring the best details of Disney, both in terms of the magic of the parks as well as the business behind the magic. It's part of what you get when you help support the Wayfinder Society. This Patreon group not only helps to pay and support the podcast attending websites, but also gives you access to some really fun guides and things. There are two lower tiers that celebrates all things Disney. So if you're a fan, you're going to find all sorts of great stuff, interactive tools. We continue to explore Pirates of the Caribbean in what will ultimately become probably the biggest resource on Pirates of the Caribbean that no book has ever covered before. It continues to showcase through media, through interactions, through photos and videos and all sorts of things. But we also talk about World of Pandora and so forth. There is just so much to glean from. And then those in the upper tiers are also provided content that focuses on best in business practices at Disney and their application to your organization, like the podcast we had today on Disney's Casting Center. In fact, there's a whole new online segment that we are introducing this week that's going into great detail about how Disney provides a compelling employee experience, not just through casting and hiring, but through through training and development, the orientation, through recognition, through facilities. There are so many, through benefits, all these aspects of it. If you really want to know what makes being a Disney cast member different than anything else, you have got to be a part of this. We really have designed hours of really great material for you to explore. If you're looking for something simpler, hey, check out our new powerful Century of Powerful Disney Insights book that covers the first of the last 100 years of the Walt Disney Company, from Oswald and Lucky and Mickey Mouse through Mouseketeers and Mary Poppins and Disneyland and Walt Disney World. Check that book out. That you're going to see is this big combination of lots of really interesting Disney details accompanied by really great insights back to you and your organization, your own personal life. So check that out as well. Thanks for joining us for this Disney Insights podcast. We have so much more to cover. Thanks for being a part. And as we always say, follow the compass of your heart. Have a great day. We appreciate you joining us. Share with others. We'll see you real soon.